Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today on the program, I'm anticipating a very interesting conversation with author Bob Gebelein. He has just released his new book titled The Mental Environment, mostly about mind pollution, and has come here to talk about the mental environment, mind pollution, and much, much more. Bob Gebelein graduated from Harvard in 1956 with a BA in mathematics. In 1955, he saw the threat of nuclear annihilation as proof of a total systems failure, so he turned his back on the culture and set out to design a new civilization. Through psychotherapy, withdrawal from the culture, and dream analysis, he succeeded. In 1967, he discovered how human nature itself can be changed to create a new civilization. In 1985, he self-published Re-Educating Myself, An Introduction to a New Civilization, describing his research and the answers that he found. He has earned a living by working about 20 years as a computer programmer and creator of software systems. After retiring from programming in 1999, Bob spent 8 years writing his new book in a pristine country setting near Moose Mountain in a corner of Hanover, New Hampshire. So all sounds very interesting. I'm so happy to have Bob on the line today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Bob.
Hi, good to be here.
Great. So congratulations on your new book. You know, I know you spent 8 years writing this, as I said, and then many, many more, obviously, developing the idea for it. So how does it feel to finally have this project completed?
It feels good.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine so. So give us a brief history of how you became interested in this area of human nature and why this book was so important for you to write.
Well, actually, it's the second book in the series.
Mm.
Of course, I became interested because what we know is civilization was threatening to destroy itself in the 50s with atomic warfare, and I said, well, it's not the technology that's the problem. It's whatever is motivating us to use this technology, and there must be a better way to live. And that has driven my whole life. I have a better talent at mathematics, but I said somebody has to work on this problem. Somebody has to start somewhere and do something. As what I said in Re-Educating Myself. And then now that I've kind of gone beyond what I've done, I think the main thing that I've done is to take my psychological development beyond normal into a whole new realm of human nature, and people who've done drugs have experienced this and perhaps more. The only problem with drugs is that they come down from the drugs and they're back to what they were, whereas the psychological development is more permanent. And so anyway, from that perspective then, and being sort of a recluse, actually, I can look back on the culture that now exists and say, okay, here are some of the problem areas or the mind pollution, which I'm talking about in this book.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you seeing any comparisons with back in the 50s, 60s, when you were kind of coming to these theories and to this idea to where we are today?
Well, yeah, this is a new question that I haven't answered for Tyler. And it there are aspects of the culture which still exist today. I think the God and Man at Yale, the academics are still not acknowledging a spiritual reality, and they've sort of, the status of physical science has sort of biased, I won't say all academic activity, but physical science has so dominated our culture starting in the early 20th century that the academic people just don't recognize that there is a spiritual component. And the late William F. Buckley, who I greatly admired, although he was a total conservative, he was so elegant. God and Man at Yale, he was complaining that they didn't accept the conventional forms of religion. I am complaining that they don't accept the forms of belief in the spiritual that go beyond those conventional forms, as I mentioned in both books, that Carl Jung has identified something called original experience.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I forget. I have little moments of forgetting here. Yeah.
Oh, we all do.
original experience. It's possible actually to experience God directly. And people in Jungian analysis have done this. And I have done this in my dream analysis.
Uh-huh.
And I believe in God because I've seen God. And this is a little bit different than William F. Buckley's sort of traditional religion, which relies on faith.
Mm-hmm.
And even with this kind of evidence, the academic community is still poo-pooing the spiritual, labeling Jung a mystic, getting rid of him. They've always gotten rid of him. I think they accept him a little more than they did in the early 20th century.
Mm.
So anyway, there is the academic view which excludes the spiritual with a great deal of effort. What is new is the New Age, which came out of the drug movement in the 60s, and that's a whole new movement which didn't exist when I started out sort of claiming to have answers to our problems, and they do believe in the spiritual, but then they have their own problems, the main problem being that the taking of drugs is really a distortion of the mind as well as an opening up of the mind.
Mm. You know, I really want to get into the whole, your ideas of New Age, but before we go there, I think we need to really define what is the mental environment, just so we can get, you know, listeners up to date on what this term actually means.
This is something that it's the total environment, the environment of people's thoughts, and I say other people's thoughts in the book, but I keep growing all the time. I realize it's all the thoughts that come in. It's my own thoughts. It's dreams. It's all the books that everybody has ever read. When I walk into a bookstore and they don't understand what I mean by the mental environment, I kind of wave my hand around at all the books on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I say, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is accurate, and most of it is accurate, and some of it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the part that isn't, that's the pollution.
Okay, so now, yes, mind pollution. Tell us, this is a subtitle of your book, mostly about mind pollution. What is this?
Well, I thought about calling the book simply Mind Pollution, and then I said, no, I'm talking about this whole mental environment, and the mind pollution is only a part of it. Mind pollution is a more familiar term. There's actually a rock band with that name.
Mm, okay.
And, you know, it's been in the popular culture. I first heard it, I think, from Pete Seeger back in the 60s sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's an outfit called Adbusters, which has the Journal of the Mental Environment, and they're definition of mind pollution is usually limited to, what is on television.
In the media, right.
Advertising and the media and what is blaring at you all the time, which is obviously trying to influence you in some way, whether they're telling you the truth or not. But
mm-hmm.
actually, the the mind pollution comes at people all their lives, starting from what your mother tells you, my sister said, let's keep our mother out of this, you know. My mother, she said, so I took our mother out of this. But basically you grow up, you're told things by your parents, you're taught things in school. Most of what you're taught in school is factual until you get to college, and then it becomes more people's opinions. The mind pollution is coming at us from all directions, and I think the most insidious of this is if you're in any kind of a social group, and here I'm a recluse and I'm outside of all social groups. I have my few friends, which I've sort of hand-picked over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other kids are telling you, well, what's cool and what's not cool, or they don't even have to say it. They just kind of give you a look, and you know that you're not supposed to believe something or do something or say something, and some of this, I'd say most of this is leads to inaccuracies in what people believe.
Okay. So they're influenced by family, by peers, and it sounds to me like it's kind of a social manipulation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the phrase that I actually use in my book.
Okay. So how does one stop? I know there's some other areas with education and religion that you also touch on, but let me throw this one out at you. How do you stop being manipulated? You know, I know you live in seclusion. You've kind of chosen that path, but do we all need to kind of isolate ourselves to figure out where we've been influenced, where these inaccuracies are, or how can we be nonconformist?
How can we be? I think Tyler asked me that question, and what was I going to say? See, I'm forgetting what I'm going to say. There are little gaps in my old age, and what I'm going to say, as far as being a my advice to Tyler is, if your social group is led by people who are dominating you in a way you don't want to go, you really have to pick another social group. I, at one point in my life, there were people I thought were my friends, and suddenly they all turned against me, and I realized these people are not really my friends. They're being dominated by one person, and I don't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may be difficult for some people to do, especially if your social group is something like the academic community, and I point out an example in my book where a prominent physicist was undergoing some kind of Jungian analysis, and he was terrified that there would be a hellish laughter.
Oh no!
if his colleagues found out what he was doing, with the existing prejudice that there was at the time against Jungian psychology. How to be a I think I've been a nonconformist all my life. I've had my good friends. I remember I had a good friend in childhood, and we were. We played our own games and didn't have to go along with the pack. Some people are conformists and some people are nonconformists. And actually, there was a lady once who said, well, we all have to conform, she said. And I agreed with her totally. Yes, we all have to conform to laws of the real universe and, you know, the law of gravity and so forth, but we don't have to, and we have to conform, of course, to the legitimate government and whatever they say, but we don't have to conform to people who set themselves up as leaders to dominate other people just socially.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said to Tyler, I'm repeating myself, we can find another group, so I guess we could go along get along to another question.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so you're talking about the social pressures of family, of peer. So let's talk about education and the academic community. You know, you touched on that a little bit about excluding spirituality, but how else would they create inaccuracies and this mind pollution?
I think spirituality is the main subject that because of the total success of physical science the success of physical science, they actually steer the psychologists away from studying the mind.
I understand that you actually suggest that psychologists don't study the mind. How so?
Well, they in 1913, under the leadership of John B. Watson, who wrote, it was a marvelous paper. He said, well, psychologists at the time were having problems studying the mind with introspective techniques. I mean, the way we all observe our own minds, we kind of look inside and what am I thinking and what am I feeling? And they had subjects who were trained to report accurately, what am I thinking, what am I feeling? And this was proving to be inaccurate or unreliable or something, and John B. Watson said, well, let's study physical behavior, which the psychologist can observe, and let's see how far that takes us, is what he said. He didn't say to stop studying the mind. He just said, let's just study behavior and see how far we can get with it. Mm. But because physical science had such high status, I mean, physical science is thought of as being absolutely, totally reliable.
Right.
And it's achieved this huge reputation, so the psychologists were able to kind of improve their reputation by studying physical behavior. Now they study the physical brain, and they're reporting all these brain areas. They observe the brain in the various types of scans. But they're not, you know, the colors in the scan are going whatever, yellow, orange, and red when a person is having a dream. That doesn't tell them what the dream is.
That's true.
And that's the difference between what they're studying and what they're not studying. I'm looking at the dream. I'm saying, oh, I dreamt last night I was back in my childhood home and doing some foolish thing, and why was that? And so anyway, the psychologists have been steered away, most of them, in the fields of psychotherapy. The Freudian and Jungian traditions are still more oriented toward the mind, but the rest of psychology is still pretty much involved. I mean, even the Freudian, they're trying to prove Freud's discoveries by sort of physical methods, Freud didn't prove them by physical methods. He proved them by observing minds and by observing dreams and people's inner processes. So anyway, the psychologists have moved away from that, and what I'm suggesting is that they should move back to that, and that actually the tradition of Freud and Jung has, in their tradition, has actually discovered, you know, it solved some of the problems that early psychologists have. They discovered reasons why people do report the wrong things in their about their mental processes and how to resolve it and so forth. Anyway, I'm getting to be a little long-winded on this subject.
So you think there's a call or a need for some of the more traditional approaches to psychotherapy?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the traditional approach, I think people like myself have actually verified that these traditional approaches work, and I think one of the things that needs to be done is some people like myself need to publicize it.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, psychotherapy is good, and a couple of my nieces actually are with me on this, and they're ready to declare publicly that, yes, we've been through psychotherapy, and it works, and it's a good thing. But, of course, it's been kept secret because you can be denied a security clearance if you've ever been to a psychiatrist.
That's really true. There can be repercussions if you have that on your record somewhere.
I got out of that the most recent. This was back in 1968 was the last time I had to apply for a security clearance for a job. But the way I got out of it was the guy who was examining me, I said, well, now, you're not qualified to examine me psychologically. You're a, whatever, a Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Say that, but, you know, some kind of a cop. I mean, he was examining
yeah.
me. And I said, I would be very happy to submit to examination by a qualified psychiatrist. And he said, oh, would you sign that? And I said, gladly.
Yeah.
And that's how, but this whole The implication is if you've ever been to a psychiatrist, you must be crazy.
Right.
And therefore, you're a security risk. So.
Right. Interesting. Okay, so let's get to religion, Bob, because this is also a big issue, a big hot topic for you. So tell us how you define religion and why you feel it is destructive.
Well, okay, now, I believe in God and I believe in Christ because I've experienced these entities in my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
and experienced by this original experience. But religion, I define as a religious, a rigid belief system, which is instilled into people at a young age with threat of hellfire and damnation, and of course punishment by their parents if they don't believe it.
Mm.
And this rigid belief system, well, I'm really a scientist, and I believe that a belief system should be flexible, and that a book written thousands of years ago may not describe the reality in the best possible way.
Mm.
And I call the Bible, I say the Bible is not God's word, the Bible is people's word. Well, the religious people, I had one marvelous review by a Christian reviewer where he said, now, of course, the Bible is not people's word, the Bible is God's word, but he went on to say, and recommend my book and say that it deals with fundamental human issues. And I think it was a wonderful review, of course, because this the person I expected to oppose me and just throw the book in the trash.
Right.
You know. But anyway, I see in my mind, I was watching something on television and seeing little girls in white dresses being told that evolution is the work of the devil.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of stuff you get in religion. I think Tyler, I believe, said he was brought up as a Catholic, which immediately my former late brother-in-law had a, it was a little toy thing of a nun with a ruler that, you know, you wound it up and this nun came at you wagging the ruler.
Hit you with the ruler? Oh, my God.
Yeah, hit you with the ruler, which is, this was what nuns did to
right.
children in schools.
That's terrible.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their book to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is the priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Bob Gebelein, author of The Mental Environment. You can find out more about Bob through his website, omdega.com. Well, now, do you feel this way about all organized religion, or are you just talking more specifically to Christianity?
I am talking to Christianity, first of all, because I know Christianity better than other religions.
Okay.
I suspect it's true of other religions. I very deliberately do not mention the Muslim religion because of the political situation now, but I do suspect that they are just as rigid and have the same problems as Christianity. And what I do say in my book is that each religion has its own particular truth and believes it knows the ultimate truth, and yet they are all different, so they couldn't all know the ultimate truth, and at most one of them could possibly know the ultimate truth, and most likely none of them know the ultimate truth. And I feel very strongly that they should all get together and share their insights.
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something, except they have these rigid belief systems where, you know, this is true and this is false. But I would love to see all religions get together and share, pool their spiritual insights. Period.
Okay, so let's get back to what we were talking, or you were mentioning earlier, regarding New Age and New Age spirituality. How do you define the New Age?
Well, I believe it came out of the drug movement, out of people taking LSD and getting way, way, way high on it. And for some, it was not just a recreational drug. I just read recently that heroin causes something like an orgasm. Well, LSD, of course, gave people marvelous sexual experiences. But beyond that, people got the idea that it was leading them to the spiritual. And I knew a guy who claimed he was on the very next level to God in a LSD trip. Well, I think the leaders of the drug movement realized fairly quickly that drugs weren't leading them to spirituality, and they all went off to India to meditate and learn from spiritual leaders there. But the LSD experience was so powerful that this is what initiated the whole New Age movement and the New Age thought, and most of the ideas which are in the New Age thought. I got a bunch of books once, and a book called Beyond Ego. Well, they never defined ego. What is ego? And suddenly I realized, well, of course, they don't have to define it because everybody has experienced this in an LSD trip. They've gone beyond ego where they're not, you know, the bag of skin that you're in is dissolved and you are one with the universe. And if you haven't had this experience, you really don't know what it means to be beyond ego. And if you have, then you don't have to define it in words. So this drug experience is really the basis of the, won't say all the New Age thinking. I mean, somebody said, like Tyler said, well, you believe in reincarnation, and that's New Age thinking. Well, yes, I do, but the part of the New Age thinking that I disagree with is what comes from the drug experience.
Expanding the consciousness through
Expanding the consciousness, which is, that's fine, but then you come back down, and you're back to where you were.
Right, so not applying any of those insights gained into life, just having the experience for the experience? Is that
it's you're not able to apply it or assimilate it. I mean, you have an LSD trip and it takes you far, far out, but people are just not able to assimilate this. They get the idea that there are multiple realities, which there really aren't. There's only one reality which encompasses everything, and the mind is just not developed enough. Yes, you've had this experience, but the mind is just not developed enough to fit it in with the everyday logical human earthly existence. And this is what you get in psychotherapy is you develop slowly and you integrate all this development into your ordinary plodding existence.
Now, how would you, I think that some people would suggest that, you know, the dream work you're talking about, that's really taking you into an altered state of consciousness. And even you yourself say that you experience God in Christ. And some people would suggest that maybe on an LSD trip, they would have that same experience as someone else would in a dream state. Do you not agree with that? Do you think those are two different things completely?
Partly I agree with it. And, I mean, I think, yes, I mean, people have experienced God and Christ, I'm sure, in LSD states. I'm just saying that they haven't done the mental work to assimilate it. They think that because they've been there now, they know it all.
Okay.
And on some level, yes, they've experienced it, but it's sort of too overwhelming. It's hard to, I don't know, the only word I know here is assimilate, and I keep coming back to it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're...
it's integrating, I guess. Integrating it.
Integrating. When I had a dream winter, the winter of 1966 and 67, where I was here in Provincetown and collecting my unemployment check, and I just dreamed at night and analyzed dreams all day, and I dreamed that I was on a sailboat sailing down through the islands. It's a slow experience, and every day I would try to assimilate, figure out what all my dreams meant. I didn't always succeed. I dreamt of seven blobs of color, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And this puzzled me. Each blob of color represented a different personality aspect. For example, one was intellect and the other was emotion, and they just didn't seem to agree with each other at all. They were totally different aspects. So that puzzled me for a while, and then a couple of nights later, I dreamt I was an artist creating a painting out of all these colors.
Oh
yes.
Wow.
All right, so they're all different, but you can create an art form out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this slow, you know, the puzzlement of being confronted with a dream and the work of trying to figure out what it means, this effort brings it all together.
Mm-hmm.
With help from the dreams who are coaching me all the time and giving me new insight. And it's a slow, slow process of learning. I'm just thinking of math. You don't go to the first grade and have an LSD trip and learn everything up through differential equations in a 12-hour LSD trip.
Sure.
Or if you did and you came back down in the first grade, okay, what do you know? Well, I don't know, you know. And I mean, this is maybe a silly example, but this is what I'm trying to say about the LSD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I asked, I had a girlfriend at the time who had a guy who got her all kinds of drugs, and I asked him, okay, how much for an LSD trip? Well, for you, nothing. No, no, no. What's the market price? $10. Okay, for $10.
Right.
You know, by the American standard of you get what you pay for, you know, I don't know that that's valid, but anyway, for $10, you know, what is this worth? Whereas what I went through was actually 17 years of mental effort through my whole, I mean, starting even before psychotherapy, trying to psychoanalyze myself all the way up through till I figured, okay, I've done enough of this and I feel good and I'm fine. You know, 17 years of mental effort of really struggling with these things.
Yeah. So let's get to your idea of a new civilization. This is what your first book, Reeducating Myself.
Yes.
That's basically what the premise was to your first book. But explain what your idea of a new civilization is and how do we get there?
How do we get there? Okay, that's good, because, yes, you're asking just the right question.
Oh, good.
I set out, of course, with the threat of nuclear annihilation and other problems that there were. One of the other problems, which I haven't mentioned, but it's true of a lot of people, I was the American dream come true. Like, there's the American dream of someday we're going to, you know, have money and live in comfort. Well, I was brought up that way, and now what do I do? So that was just another problem of where we've actually succeeded. Now, where do we go beyond having money and having physical comfort? Anyway, I was motivated, and I set out, and I had no idea where I was going, and I was tested by the Navy, and they indicated that I had a psychological problem. Okay, let's explore this avenue. So I explored that avenue, along with doing a lot of philosophizing and thinking about things. I explored the psychotherapy, and I went to the psychiatrist, and after 4 years, he said, you're okay, you're fine, but I just felt something was missing. So I continued the psychotherapy. Actually, the dreams picked it up, my dreams, in December of 1966. They picked up where the psychiatrist had left off, and they said, okay, yes, you're normal, and here are these people who are normal, but they're not psychologically mature. They're still psychologically 10 years old, and this is where our culture is, and this is why the American system of competing in your own self-interest, that's why it works, and other altruistic systems like socialism and communism don't work, because that's where people are at. Anyway, I pursued my psychological growth because I wasn't satisfied that with the answers that I had found, and also I saw that I had not yet reached the psychological age of puberty, and I said, aha, maybe that's why I'm not having great success with women. My relationships, plenty of women were attracted to me. If you get my picture, I'm still okay looking, you know, even as an old guy. But I didn't have the relationships that I wanted to have, and I said, aha, so I'll pursue this. So I took my psychological growth beyond normal to the psychological age of puberty, and yes, I did have better relationships with women, and I went beyond that to the psychological age of adulthood. And so the new civilization, I said, aha, if people, the psychological age of puberty is where this human nature changes, and it's no longer self-interest, you're more interested in self-sacrifice and giving yourself to others and charitable ventures,
service,
and having compassion to all kinds of people, even Adolf Hitler. I mean, some people get furious at me for that, but yes, I have compassion for that poor guy who, you know, demented guy who had this power and unfortunately led the world into chaos. My political opponents will say, oh, yes, he admired Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, they won't like that too much, but, you know, you have your reasons.
No, I don't admire Adolf Hitler. I have compassion for the poor guy. You know, even then, I say poor guy, he realized he was responsible for killing 50 million people, so.
Yeah.
Hard to say he's a poor guy, but yeah, a poor guy can get, you know, it's alleged that he got into alliances with demonic forces and all that. And yeah, he's down there in hell now. I mean, I believe that.
I think that's a whole conversation unto itself if we're going to talk about Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, I'm getting off the subject.
That's okay. I mean, it's fascinating.
What I really want to say about the civilization is that at this psychological age of puberty, one turns from like compassion and self-interest into compassion and interest for humanity and dedicating oneself to humanity and all those things. And I think if a majority of people reach that point, we would have a new civilization.
Mm.
And if you want to follow that line, I mean, where psychotherapy is not just bringing you from subnormal to normal, but going beyond normal into other realms which aren't recognized as normal. There are some people, there are three kids I grew up with who reached psychological maturity on their own. And they're the exceptions, of course, out of maybe 300 kids I knew, as a youngster.
So psychotherapy then is the key to the new civilization? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That is the key. And and the reason why drugs don't do it is because people haven't worked at it enough. I mean, if you take actually LSD was first experimented with as a drug for psychotherapy, because it does open people up, but then you have to work with this stuff and think about it and integrate it and do a lot of mental effort.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, who do you hope reads this book? Who was your intended audience?
Well, I first thought there are young people out there, gifted young people, who know there are things wrong with the system, but they're not sure exactly what those things are. I mean, there are obvious things that are wrong with the system. Corporations have too much control over government. I mean, that's very, very obvious. But there are a lot of things that aren't obviously wrong, and I think some of these gifted, rebellious young people might like to read this book.
Oh, yeah.
And find out. And I think that beyond that, I think the Republicans have made a policy of using what I would call Machiavellian or manipulative tactics or character assassination. And I've been telling the Democrats for years, actually, I said, I won't give you any more money unless you learn to deal with these tactics. And the senator from Missouri, and I just forget her name now, but she announced in, I think it was 2004 or 2006, she said, announced that she had defeated the tactics of character assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I like Barack Obama because he deals very nicely with all of that. That's the first thing I noticed about him, even before the I didn't even know, it's not well publicized, that he was first in his class at Harvard Law School.
Oh.
I don't know why that's not publicized. More,
and not too much seems to sway him.
What I'm trying to say is I thought he was like a Chicago street kid.
Right,
no idea.
True.
And the prep schools in Hawaii, exclusive prep school in Hawaii, and places like that. You know, I just thought, oh, yeah, he's dealing with these smear tactics because he's grew up on the streets, which, of course, was totally false. But anyway, that's what I like about him, and this is one of the things that my book hopefully will teach people, all Democrats should read this book, all Republicans should read this book, because I think a lot of them have been bamboozled where George Bush has favored the very wealthy, who are 1% of the population. The religious right are 20% of the population. That's 21%. Now, the other 30% you need to win an election must have been bamboozled. Why are you getting rid of the inheritance tax? Well, the two Republican senators wrote back to me and said, in order to keep the family farm, poor people who have the family farm and they don't want to have to pay this inheritance tax because that would ruin them. Now, it's taken me 4 or 5 years to figure my way out of that one. Is, of course, if the family farm is then going to be worthless when the father dies, then it's worthless.
What's
and there's
the point?
No inheritance
mm-hmm.
tax to
right,
pay.
Right. Gosh, Bob, so, we could go on for.
I'm off the subject.
That's okay. There's so many things I think you and I could sit and talk about today. But yes, our time is definitely starting to come to an end here. So I wanted to make sure we got your website in. Can you tell listeners today where they can find you on the web?
Okay. First of all, I think it's easiest to find my book on Amazon.com.
Okay.
And there are a couple of good reviews that I know have been posted there. And it probably get as much information there as my website. My website, I call myself Omdega Press.
Mm.
And the website is Omdega.com, which is Omdega.
Okay. .com.
Okay.
And do you make regular posts on there, or is it just strictly a website?
It's sort of a minimum website. I've been posting all the reviews on the blog,
mm-hmm.
And Omdega/blog. You go to that.
Okay.
Omdega.com/blog and a blog. and I've been posting all the reviews there and my comments on them. Inviting readers' comments, but I haven't had that many.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a little bit of time. Okay, so your website, omdega.com, omdega.com. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a very interesting conversation, and as I said, I wish that we just had all day to talk because I have a feeling we could go off on so many different tangents about
I could go off on the whole universe.
I know you could. I definitely got that. So thank you so much, and best to you, and much success with your new book.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. You take care, Bob.
You too.
All right, listeners. I've been talking with Bob Gebelein. His new book, The Mental Environment, can be found through online booksellers, as mentioned, Amazon.com. As well, Bob's website has got additional information, and that's omdega.com, omdega.com. So I'm sure that you enjoyed this interview as much as I did today. There's a lot of information. We definitely suggest that you check out his book, The Mental Environment. Very, very interesting stuff. So thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.